All right, good morning, everybody. Today is Thursday, October 29th, 2015. And this is Before the First Cup with Jules here on UCY.TV. Happy Thursday, everybody. We're almost there. It gets tougher and tougher every day to get to that Friday. It is 50 degrees and partly cloudy here in upstate New York. At least it stopped raining. We had torrential rains for the entire day yesterday with like 30 to 50 mile an hour winds. And like I had guessed, yeah, most of our leaves are gone now. I think the only ones I really see out back now is the oak that tends to hold on to its leaves. But most of the maples are completely done. Color is gone. And we are getting ready to settle into winter. Not fun. Not fun at all. All right. So where do we leave off yesterday? We titled the show FDA, Dr. Huber's Research, Bioweapons, and New GMOs. We've taken a look at a few things in regards to our food supply and some of the dots that are connecting, at least for me. The new appointee to the FDA happens to be a big pharma lobbyist, so who would have guessed that one? He is going to fit right in with the 21st Century Care Act. We talked about that. The big push with this national precision medicine and bioeconomy blueprint to be able to allow the drug companies and the device manufacturers, instead of going through the long, drawn-out process that supposedly kills sick people with the FDA for evaluation of products, they want to now direct to consumer market and allow sick and dying people to be the guinea pigs to test these devices and drugs and then approve them based upon case studies. It's very disturbing to me. I mean, we know that there really hasn't been much in the way of protections, even though they tell us there are fraudulent studies and butt-slapping, palm-rubbing in the FDA and the USDA. We find out that, you know, things have been in our food for a long time that nobody even had to label or tell us about. We did a show on cloned beef, cloned meat in general. I think we discovered there was cloned beef and pork and sheep, or I don't know, maybe sheep was the one that you couldn't put into the food supply, but they'd rubber stamp that years ago. 2001, I think, is when they first started talking about it, and the FDA kind of gave them a conditional. 2008 is when they said, you know what, it's all the same. A cow is a cow, and a chicken is a chicken, and a pig is a pig. So, you know what? Don't worry about it. We don't need labels. Just let it go. We also had the World Trade Organization come out and bitch slap us this summer, stating that our country of origin labels were illegal as per international law. We had Canada and Mexico crying that by us putting labels stating what country their meat was from, that they were losing sales. And so they came at the United States and went to the World Trade Organization. They cried about it, and the WTO came back and told us we needed to remove our country of origin labeling. We also had the TPP steaming through this summer. They inked it between 12 nations, I believe, just a month or so ago. And one of the big tenets of the TPP, again, was to get rid of labeling, to circumvent labeling laws, to allow GMOs into countries that didn't have GMOs allowed before, who had voted them out. So this is very ugly what's happening here. So now we got this new appointee who's a big pharma mega lobbyist who they are trying to approve to head the FDA. I mean, talk about the fox tending the hen house. So anyone who's out there who thinks that they are keeping your best interest or your child's best interest in mind is a screw loose. You know, and then we continued it on with Dr. Huber. If you haven't heard of Dr. Huber before, look him up. He's Don Huber. He has a very long 50-year, very impressive history of all the things that he's done, and he is a global authority on plant pathology, biowarfare, and agriculture. And we listened to three or four little snippets Actually, I think we listened to three little snippets from Dr. Huber yesterday in interviews discussing glyphosate and the damage that he has been finding in the ecosystem that he directly relates back to the use of glyphosate in genetically modified organisms. He looked at the plants and how the plants are all dying and they're having trouble uptaking essential nutrients from the soil. I don't know if one of the clips yesterday said this or not, but I've listened to all the interviews that he has out there. And one of the other things that is doing is killing all the beneficial bacteria in the soil as well as in the animals. Now, he talks about gut flora as well and how glyphosate is a very strong antibiotic. And we've done all kinds of shows looking at gut flora and the brain gut connection and how important gut flora is not only to your psychological makeup. I mean, they found that when you have bad bacteria in your gut, you tend to be pretty depressed and have all kinds of other issues, but it also is key to a strong immune system. So as we are all being poisoned by glyphosate, that is, and I found an article yesterday, I just kind of postulated how much of our food is genetically modified. I found a story yesterday that stated between 70 and 80% of all food in the United States has genetic modification in it. I mean, that's three quarters of all the food that's out there. You start to see a disturbing picture, and then we get to all of these natural disasters and droughts and, you know, oh my God, it's global warming and things are going awry. And because of all these quote unquote disasters, we have this inability to produce enough food. I mean, the prices of food have been going through the roof. If anybody's gone grocery shopping lately and compare it to even 6 months ago, look at the price of meat. It's insane. Vegetables, try and buy something organic and see if you can afford it for a month to go completely organic, because I think it is probably, for most of us, completely impossible. You know, you start seeing how if you're not rich, if you don't have an endless pocketbook, if you're not in the know, you're going to be one of the people who is unwillingly or unwittingly becoming a guinea pig for the system to see what happens. Remember, R&D line item budget is a cost and it affects shareholder profits. So anytime that they can offload their research, development, and testing out of the general populace, and then of course put into place something like electronic medical health records and precision medicine, so everything about you is now in a database. I just saw the new CISA security bill passed the Senate. It's now going up in front of the House. And one of the big things that had been argued about the CISA bill, and this is the information sharing between companies and the government in the name of national security, one of the big issues is that pretty much all the privacy protections that have been argued to be put into that bill got left behind. And these big corporations collecting your data can pass it on without any type of ramifications whatsoever to the feds if they think, you know, that it's going to help national security. So you think about information that's stored, right? We talked about HIPAA Privacy Act, and that was a big thing that Obama touched on right after the Sandy Hook shooting, and he came out and he made his like 35 executive actions. And one of the things that he had talked about was getting rid of those pesky HIPAA laws. Those HIPAA laws protected your health information. You and your doctor had a confidential relationship. And if those laws are cut away or shot down or minimized, there's not, I mean, we looked at companies such as 23andMe that got people to simply check a box saying that if they gave up their genomic data to do ancestry, you know, quote unquote, give us your DNA so we can see where your ancestry is, but check this little box so we can use your DNA in research. You know, they had close to 1 million subscribers who had already given it up for the name of science, and they want us all to do that. They want that to be a requirement. They want you to follow their rules. And the picture that they are painting is that we have been slovenly. We haven't eaten healthy, especially the Western world. It's all our fault. We have not taken care of our genes, right? We've had lots of stress and we've eaten lots of pizza and smoked and drank for the last 20 or 30 years and we are damaging ourselves. And now we've become a burden to the system because, you know, we have Obamacare in place and we're hurting taxpayers that have to foot the bill for you sick people out there. But don't worry about it because there's, you know, not enough natural food that was causing the dangers to go around anyway, like the processed and red meats. Remember we talked about that. We're going to look at that. Don't worry about it too because those GMOs, well, you know what? Don't worry about the GMOs because we've now found a way. If we're not able to do it with the TPP and we're not able to do it with any of our campaigns to make you believe that GMOs are good, don't worry about it. We have found a way around the laws and we're going to use this newfangled CRISPR technology to flip switches on and off using some sort of microorganism. So we won't need to label GMOs regardless of what the laws are. I mean, it's just really sick. Story came out of Anti-Media yesterday. I thought this was quite timely. I had not caught this before the show by Derek Brose. Senate holds hearing on GMO labeling, but only hears one side of the debate. This is part two now of what they were affectionately or disaffectionately calling the Dark Act. Let's read this. Several speakers at a recent Senate hearing on labeling food that contain genetically modified organisms are connected to or have shown support for big agriculture industry. And we also found out, I mean, the head of the FDA and the USDA are well, the current head of the FDA are well in bed with Monsanto with the revolving door. Anyway, back to Derek's story. The hearing titled Agricultural Biotechnology, A Look at Federal Regulation and Stakeholder Perspectives, comes in response to a bill passed by the U.S. House of Representatives in July, and I believe that is the Dark Act. That bill would create a federal voluntary standard for GMO labeling and block mandatory labeling efforts by the states. Yeah, the name that they gave it was the Safe and Accurate Food Labeling Act, the one that doesn't have to label GMOs, to the supporters. And it's also called the Dark Act, Deny Americans the Right to Know Act by critics. This law would effectively nullify GMO labeling measures like the bill recently passed in Vermont. And yes, Vermont was one of the few states that had said, screw this. We are going to demand that GMOs are labeled if you want to sell them in the state of Vermont. The Vermont law is scheduled to go into effect July 2016. Maine and Connecticut have also passed laws requiring labeling, but those measures will not go into effect until bordering states also pass legislation, which I always thought that was weird. Like they couldn't stand on their own. They had to wait until everyone else got on board. The U.S. Senate Committee on Agriculture, Nutrition, and Forestry heard testimonies from several speakers representing farmers, the GMO lobby and consumer groups, and officials from the U.S. Department of Agriculture, the Food and Drug Administration, the Environmental Protection Agency also testified. Why wasn't Dr. Huber invited to this hearing is what I'd like to know. The hearing was a balanced look at the issues surrounding GMOs and biotechnology in general. At least that's what the Senate would have you believe. As Reuters reported, quote, the Consumers Union and five other consumer organizations sent a letter to the Senate committee complaining that the lineup of speakers was not balanced and did not include a consumer representative. Well, gee, surprise, says Gene Halloran, director of food policy initiatives for the Consumers Union. Time and time again, a large majority of consumers have expressed strong support for GMO labeling. Ronnie Cummins, an international director for the Organic Consumers Association and a speaker at the hearing, released a scathing review of the events. Today's hearing on H.R. 1599 made a total mockery of democracy. Of the 8 witnesses allowed to testify, only one could be remotely considered as someone who represents the interest of consumers and public health, said Cummins. The other 7 have ties to the biotech and the corporate food industries and were there to represent the interests of corporations, not people. And isn't that what we're seeing more and more in anything that has to do with government? It's a corporatocracy. It is not by the people, for the people, by the people anymore. We are being told what to eat, what to get injected into us, what to breathe. You know, it's okay. Don't worry about it. We just change the allowable amounts of particulates in the atmosphere. It won't hurt you. Nah. And if it does, well, we'll have 21st Century Cures Act to fix you. Don't worry about it. The list of industry witnesses includes representatives from the American Soybean Association, which, of course, we know the majority of soybeans are all genetically modified. Oh, and the National Corn Growers Association. Well, I believe it's like 90% of all corn in the U.S. is also GMO. And the Food and Agriculture for the Biotechnology Industry Organization. All organizations that directly benefit from the GMO technology. Perhaps unsurprisingly, a majority of the witnesses came out in support of giving the federal government more power and taking away influence from the states and local government. And again, that is another march forward that we are seeing across the board, is taking away state sovereignty and putting everything under the federal guise, where they are telling us what needs to be done and we need to all fall into lockstep. Or else, I don't know, maybe we won't receive funding. That's typically the way they play the game. The American Soybean Association called on senators to, quote, come to the table and finalize a plan to establish a voluntary national framework for the labeling of foods containing GMOs. While Brian Baining, executive vice president for the BIO, which is the Biotechnology Industry Organization, expressed support for the bill. Well, of course he would. In particular, we echo ranking member Stabau's request for a solution that addresses the problem of a 50-state patchwork of regulations while providing transparency for consumers in a way that does not stigmatize biotechnology. Right. Because if you remember Prop 37, I believe it was, back a few years ago, California that stood up and said, we don't want GMO. Hell no GMO. Give us labeling. And Monsanto spent, I don't know, millions of dollars on a public campaign that was very deceptive, convincing people that they wanted to vote yes or no on proposition. I don't remember which it was, but it was whatever the one we didn't want. It was in the benefit of the biotechnology companies. But they got people convinced that they were voting yes on GMO labeling, but they weren't. They were voting yes on GMOs being allowed without labeling. And the reason that the corporations cried about the labeling was that they said, I saw a number when they did estimates. They said it was going to cost an average family in New York $500 extra a year on food because of the labeling. Now, I don't know about you, but I see quite often corporations change their labeling when they come out with a new and improved version of, I don't know, their chicken soup or their cereal or whatever. And a lot of times, there really isn't any new improvement. They just decided to make the box like 3 ounces smaller, but they put a new big fancy label on it. You know, I cannot see. There's already mandated labeling for nutritional labels on food. And this, of course, they said that that's outdated. So this whole dark act or whatever they called it, right to know, known as the Safe and Accurate Food Labeling Act. Originally, when this all came out, it was about those nutritional labels being so outdated. It doesn't tell you about calories or what you need to do to burn them or all this stupid crap. And so they decided that they had to change that. But under that same guise, they decided to slip in the wet willy to remove any state laws to make this a federal mandate. And because, oh, it's going to be unfair for us to have to label that we have GMO and people are scared and they're anti-science and they don't understand that it's going to hurt their sales. And remember, too, under the TPP, that's one of the things that they gave the TPP was teeth to go after countries, just like the World Trade Organization, to go after countries who they believe have been unfairly marketing their products so they don't make the sales that they had anticipated. So let's say you're a country that doesn't allow GMOs, and I have products you inked onto the TPP, and I have products that have genetically modified ingredients, and I want to sell them in your country, and I have slated $1 million in sales for 2016 in your country. Well, if you put a label on it saying it's GMO and I don't make my $1 million in sales, or you outright refuse to sell my product because you don't want to sell GMOs, but you inked onto the TPP, I'm going to come after you for restitution, because I now lost profits. And you talk about the corporations, and you know, we talk about the government taking away state sovereignty. The government has become the corporations. So talk about the corporatocracy on a global level now. They are pushing it to that level to be able to tell us what we are, what we can consume, what we can do, and what we can't do. I mean, this is very, 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 very disturbing. And I know people are sick of hearing of GMOs, but I'm telling you, this is probably one of the most important issues, and it all ties into the mad science gone mad. This is DNA and RNA switch flipping. This is edible vaccines. It's all the same technologies that are going into the future human 2.0, future Earth 2.0, the destruction of biology. All right, let's finish the story. So anyway, they're like, oh, yeah, this is going to address the problem of the big problem of 50 states with their own patchworks of laws. You know, like we've said so many times before, if GMOs were so great, if they were going to save the planet, if they were so healthy for everybody, then of course they'd want to label it. All right, anyway, while these statements are meant to sound empathetic to the consumer, they are actually deceptive propaganda, ding, ding, from individuals representing institutions that will directly benefit from the passage of the DARK Act. The Organic Consumers Association compiled a list of witnesses' connections to the biotech industry. Pro-GMO website Grist did its best to portray the hearing as a balanced and focused on the science behind GMOs. And we know there is no science that says GMOs are healthy. There was a link, actually, that Dan put into chat yesterday. And I think I may have posted this here. Hold on one second. I had so many crashes yesterday, and then we had all kinds of other issues. It was, no, this isn't it. So I don't know. I might have to dig that one up somewhere. I don't know where I put it. But anyway, all right, let's get back to the story. The American Soybean Association called on senators to come to the table and finalize a plan of this framework. As Grist wrote, of course, this was the Agriculture Committee, and I'd expect some pro-GMO sentiments from Democrats with big constituencies of farmers, but I was also expecting to see some senators from more liberal states channeling anti-GMO concerns as well. No, because you know what? The liberal states are all talking about us eating bug protein. We're going to look at that. Instead, I heard strong pro-GMO statements, and no senator planted a flag on the anti-GMO ground. Well, no, because they're probably all invested. Indeed, no senator was willing to change the obvious bias of the hearing. At one point, Heidi Heitkamp, a Democrat from North Dakota, asked William Jordan of the EPA's Office of Pesticide Programs to elaborate on how the agency worked to provide accurate information to the public regarding the safety of GMO crops. Jordan basically said, people distrust the government, making it difficult to get the public to accept pro-GMO research. I saw a study, I think it was like 73% of Americans in a poll stated they want labeling, no less. But they know it's good for us, so don't worry about it. I believe the science is so strong in this area, they said, that these are products that will not have adverse effects in any way on health. In fact, it can improve health by making food more available worldwide. And yet it seems we are losing the fight, he says, not just on labeling, but on how we are going to make these products more accessible. And, you know, as we find out, Monsanto was laying off, I think the number was around 10,000 employees because numbers are going down. Boo hoo hoo. Places like McDonald's are closing stores. Boo hoo hoo. They just push harder now that they see that people are on to the deception. Grist, the magazine Grist, also reported that Joanna Lindback, a dairy farmer from Vermont, also spoke in favor of GMOs, stating the technology allows farmers to be, quote, responsible stewards of their land. If she only understood, they are killing the microbiota in the soil, in the plants, in the animals. How can she be a dairy farmer and not see the higher rates of spontaneous abortion and stillbirths of her cattle? They're finding that time and time again. Dr. Huber talked about the one pig farmer or somebody that was helping this pig farmer. They had like a 70% loss, I believe he said, of their herd, and they couldn't figure out why. Not to mention that glyphosate also prevents the uptake of essential nutrients to the organism that's consuming them. The hearing is sure to create further controversy around the growing use of genetically modified foods and the corporatism between companies like Monsanto and the U.S. government. In fact, the USDA approved a new version of Monsanto's GMO corn only days ago, and we should dig into that because I bet you that's the RNAi corn that was on their 2015 forward-looking statement. Whenever you stand on the issue of GMOs, we should all recognize that each individual deserves to know what they are eating, and yes, we should. I don't want to eat pesticide, RNAi, or bugs. And the DARC Act will only make it more difficult for states and localities to find remedies that work for their specific environments. This bill will also push the U.S. one step closer to full-on corporatocracy. But what are the solutions for fighting it? The Organic Consumers Association offers this message. Today, we call on millions of Americans to contact their elected officials with this message. If you vote against state rights, if you vote against truth and transparency and labeling, if you vote the more than 90% of Americans, so I guess the number got higher, who want mandatory, not voluntary, labeling of GMO foods, we will vote against you. And if you're not one for voting, try getting involved with a local community farm, urban farm, farmer's market, or backyard garden. Get your hands in the soil. Take control of your diet. We know all that. But remember, resistance is fertile. Ha, ha, ha. And sometimes it's futile. It's very disturbing to me that for as much as you call and send letters, we had Dr. Huber yesterday. We found out that he sent a letter to Tom Vilsack, the head of the USDA, outlining all of his research and the concerns that he had found with glyphosate in crops and animals as they were getting ready to rubber stamp again more crops. That time it was the alfalfa and the sugar beets. And be aware, sugar beets are in a lot of stuff. I don't remember what the industry name for it is, but it's one of those alternative sugars that they are using in a lot of products. But he tried to head off the rubber stamp approval of the GMO alfalfa that is a forage crop for a lot of the livestock animals, as well as sugar beets, which, like I said, is going into a lot of consumer products now. with we'll have to look that up, but it's some, you know, cutesy consumer name that's going to take the place of aspartame or whatever, or NutraSweet or Sucra or whatever the new name is that they're calling it. You know, healthy and skinny as you, make sure you eat this. And then we find out 20 years from now, it made an arm grow out of the back of your head. But don't worry about it. We got a cure for that. You know, so anyway, the USDA did not listen to Dr. Huber. So if they didn't listen to Dr. Huber, who is a global authority, who worked with our biotechnology program, who's a global authority on pathological diseases and biological pathological diseases, how are they going to listen to you and me? I mean, I'd love to threaten my congressman with voting him out, but do they think they're really going to care? Because you know what? They probably get a large amount of kickbacks from the biopharma and the GMO industry to make up for any threat that you or I could provide. I'm trying to type and talk at the same time. So hold on one second, because I want to just play really quick just a two-minute snippet at the beginning of something. This is the interview that Dan dropped yesterday, and I hadn't heard this one before. It's a full hour long. But at the very, very beginning of this interview, Dr. Huber, it was an hour-long interview with Dr. Mercola and Dr. Huber, but Dr. Huber pretty much tells us, and he more than pretty much tells us, he tells us they have not done any real research. I mean, again, we established his credentials yesterday. And if anyone should know, if anyone has the pulse on what's really going on and how dangerous these things are to our health and the environment, it would be Dr. Huber. He is the guy. Wow, that's some weird noise. All right, so let's just listen to the first like 30 seconds of this. Maybe.
If I was to summarize my feelings, my research and the research that I see in the peer-reviewed scientific articles, looking at our health factors, to start with the things that we're seeing in our soil and our plants and our homes and our barns aren't normal. You go back 40 years, and I have the privilege of doing that. They're not normal. A lot of our young scientists think they are, and consequently, they don't understand and appreciate how we used to grow our plants, produce them, and what the quality used to be. Our health factors alone are overwhelming our health facilities, our capability of meeting the needs of our people. I think that future historians may well look back upon our time, write not about how many pounds of pesticides we did or didn't apply, but about how willing we are to sacrifice our children and future generations, all for this experimental process that we call genetic engineering, that's based on failed promises, flawed science, just to benefit the bottom line of a commercial enterprise.
Welcome, everyone. This is Dr. Mercola. And
how, I mean, that just gave me goosebumps. Like I said, the man has been in the industry for 50 years. He is in the know. He says that we are sacrificing our future and our children for the bottom line, and that's what it's all about, people. Just whatever you can do, go as far as you can to stop eating these poisons and to fight this beast that is trying to force us on us. And I mean, it bothers me so badly because we see where this is going. So I'm going to hit another story now. So we have this whole quote unquote climate change that is being touted everywhere. It's amazing how it just came about the last 2 years. I mean, they've been talking about it since the 80s, but it's been on steroids for the last 2 years. Oh my God, never before seen the strongest, you know, hurricane ever. Didn't we just see that? Lowest millibars. It must be because of global warming. Oh my God, the most tornadoes ever. Must be because of global warming. Oh my God, we're in the worst drought ever. Must be because of global warming. One of the things that the international organizations and the UN had come out about a long time ago was talking about cow flatulence. If you remember that story that went around about a year and a half ago, talking about methane released from cows, as well as different factory farming agricultural practices. Let's just read this really quick. This is out of Gizmodo. Do cow farts actually contribute to global warming? There are currently approximately 1.3 to 1.5 billion cows grazing, sleeping, or chewing their cud at any given time on planet Earth. And these 1,300-pound average weight for both beef and dairy cow animals eat a lot, much like humans. When they eat, they get build up gas inside of their guts that has to be expelled. Cow farts and burps a lot. The result is a large amount of methane being introduced into the atmosphere. A 2006 United Nations Food and Agricultural Organization report claims that the livestock sector, which mostly are cows, generates more greenhouse gas emission as measured in CO2 equivalent, 18%, than transport. According to a Danish study, the average cow produces enough methane per year to do the same greenhouse damage as 4 tons of carbon dioxide. So is this significantly contributing to global warming? Well, let's start with how and why cows produce so much gas. Cows, sheep, goats, giraffe, and deer belong to a class of mammals called ruminants. The most ruminants have 4 stomachs, 2 toed feet, and store their food in the first chamber of the stomach called rumen before regurgitating it. The regurgitated food is called cud, and the animals chew it again to help further break it down and make it easier to digest. And inside of the rumen, over 400 different kinds of microbes exist that play a critical role in the digestive process. Several of these microbes create methane gas is a byproduct, and due to the sheer number of cows on the planet, along with the large size per cow, our tasty friends produce more methane gas than all other ruminants combined. Well, why could this be potentially bad, you ask? Well, methane is 21 times more potent at trapping heat from the sun than carbon dioxide. And although it is less prevalent in the atmosphere than carbon dioxide, it is by unit the most destructive of greenhouse gases. Methane gas, like other greenhouse gases, acts as a blanket around the planet, trapping heat, blah, blah, blah. And livestock is the largest source of methane gas emissions worldwide, contributing to over 28% of the total emissions. Of course, we also have wetlands, leaks from oil refineries and drilling, landfills that also contribute to methane. And in fact, unlike the ratios on a global scale, in the United States, livestock is only the third largest contributor behind mining and transportation of natural gas and rotting landfill waste. So exactly how significant is it to our global environment isn't something that anyone can put a number on, but the EPA, NASA, and various global agricultural organizations, as well as, yes, the United Nations, all recognize that this is a real problem. And in recent years, several different solutions have been proposed. They have experimented with cows' diets, oh, how nice, to see if we could help cut down on the methane gas. For instance, this is kind of funny, Welsh scientists study the effects of putting garlic into cows' feeds. Oh, I bet you could taste the garlic too. According to BBC, garlic directly attacks the organisms in the gut that produce methane. Well, that's interesting to know. I didn't know about that. Researchers have also studied adding plants that are high in tannins to the diet, which are believed to lower methane levels in ruminants. Another branch of study focuses not on lowering the amount of methane gas, but figuring out ways to contain it and repurpose it. Methane gas emitted by cows and other livestock does have a significant impact on the amount of greenhouse gases in our atmosphere, which are the main culprits behind climate change and global warming. So, you know, I mean, they've been rolling that one out for quite a while, trying to convince us that eating beef, which is, of course, an American favorite pastime, livestock, farming, all that stuff that would make us independent in the past and now has been bastardized by the corporations, none of that is good for the environment anymore. And not only is it not good for the environment, but it's unsustainable because of all these disasters that we're having with our weather and droughts. And, you know, we just cannot sustain life like we have in the past. The UN then came out. Actually, this is the World Health Organization stating that processed meats, along with red meats, are now put in the category of cancer-causing substances, along with cigarettes, alcohol, asbestos, and arsenic. The UN health body says that bacon, sausages, and ham are among the most carcinogenic substances, along with cigarettes, alcohol, asbestos, and arsenic. And I mean, like we said yesterday, if they'd stop putting nitrates and nitrites into the processed meat, they may not be as dangerous as they currently are. It's not like we didn't know that they had carcinogenic material in them, but why? Why are they allowing something that's been shown to cause pancreatic cancer, and I've known this for a long time, into the food chain if they're keeping us safe? But now they have an international body that is coming down to tell us that it's going to be ranked up there with other carcinogenic compounds. Now, as we're moving toward this personalized precision medicine, and again, like I said, if you do unhealthy things, you're going to be taxing the system. Everything's so expensive now, you know. So you're going to have to eat healthier, be healthier. You're going to have to put on your little tracking watch to see that you make your 1,000 or 3,000 steps today. We're going to make sure that we take readings, and we're going to look at your shopper's card to make sure you're not buying sugary items. Oh, well, don't worry. We'll put our special nutraceutical sugar in there. We then have a story that came out, and this was just a few weeks ago. This was October 13th, 2015, out of a mainstream publication, good old Arianna Huffington's HuffPost. So a whole new section called HuffPost Healthy Living with a big smile. The good old lefties. They're not coming out pro-GMO, but they're coming out something else. Yes, yes, yes. HuffPost says it is healthier, and this is just echoing something that the UN's been saying for quite a long time. It is healthier to eat a bug than it is to eat a steak. Well, good thing, because red meat now has been deemed dangerous. Sounds like an ancient proverb, but it is actually a scientific finding. In a battle of a little insect versus the big cow, the insect wins. A study published in the European Journal of Clinical Nutrition compared the healthfulness of edible insects with more traditional protein like beef, pork, chicken, and their findings were that bugs beat out the mammals in terms of nutritional value. Researchers at the University of Oxford used two different metrics of nutritiousness. The first, the Ofcom model, which appoints a score from 1 to 100 based on a food's calories, sodium, sugar, and saturated fat content per 100 grams of weight. And I bet you this is going to be some of these new standards that they're going to put through with our nutritional labeling on our food, by the way. I remember, too, I'm having flashbacks now to reading that original story on why they said the old labels were outdated. And they said it was because the serving sizes were off. You don't usually eat 8 ounces. You only eat 4. And so by them telling you, you know, in an 8-ounce serving, there's this, that they're really not accurate numbers. But it's all a bunch of bullshit. I mean, anyone with half a brain can do the math. It says the second way for appointing scores is called the nutrient value scores, and that offers a similar score to Ofcom, but it also includes vitamin and mineral values. The Ofcom test didn't show any significant differences between bugs and livestock, but when vitamins and minerals are taken into account for the NVS evaluation, crickets, palm weevils, which are the beetles, honeybees, well, poor honeybees, wouldn't be eating them, and larvae, bleh, scored much higher than chicken and beef in particular. And while bugs have yet to make it into mainstream American cuisine, good thing, insects are often included in meals in countries like China, Mexico, and Thailand. But insect-infused products like cricket protein powders and bars are starting to creep up on U.S. store shelves, too. Insect-eating advocates say that bugs should become the millennium's preferred protein. And one perspective argues that if vegans replaced plants with insects, they'd harm fewer animals. Others say that eating insects could solve world hunger, citing sustainability benefits and the bugs' high protein content. And yeah, we've seen all of these things just recently. Interestingly enough, the same day that the study came out about processed meats being a carcinogen, we also had a report coming out about hot dogs, which also contains nitrates and nitrites. But they didn't talk about hot dogs. They talked about how they were finding human DNA in hot dogs. And not only in meat hot dogs, but also in vegan hot dogs. DNA that shouldn't be there. I mean, I want to know. We've talked about like the lack thereof of the FDA keeping us safe and the holes in their testing of what's going into our food supply. I really want to know what the allowable part per million is for human DNA in food. I bet there's not a standard for that one. But again, if like with the processed foods, if they know that there is a danger to you and me and our kids, little Johnny eating hot dogs for lunch for the first 5 years of his life. I mean, how many parents do that? If they know that there is a danger with the chemicals that are being used to preserve these foods, why are they even in the food chain? So anyway, what I am advocating here, what I am postulating is that we now have a targeted propaganda campaign that is going on right now from a multifaceted propaganda campaign to tell us that, yes, beef and livestock are bad for you because they're bad for the environment. Beef and livestock are bad for you because they're bad for your nutrition. Any type of processed foods are bad for you because they cause cancer. Anything that contains meat products is not good for you. Now, with the use of antibiotics being rampant in factory farming, as well as the consuming of GMO feed and grains, they're not good for you. We shouldn't be eating them. We should only be eating anything that is grass-fed, organic, and as far out of Fukushima radiation as we can. But nothing is safe. I mean, we discovered back a few months ago that it was close to, I think they said, 100% in factory farm dairy cows, they'd found bovine leukemia virus. And that was the CDC. But back in the 70s, they said, nah, don't worry about it because it's not going to get into humans. And now they're finding it in breast cancer tissue. That same report, it said that 37% of all beef cows were infected with bovine leukemia virus. And remember, that was just in the United States. In other countries, they had enough forethought, future thought, to cull the animals that were infected so any of the new stock was not infected. Anyway, let's finish this. If you can get past the creepy, crawly factor, hey, lobsters were once perceived as a nasty sea creature fit only for the poor, your dinner options could become a lot more interesting and vitamin packed. And yeah, they are just spinning this bug crap as far as they can go. I mean, I don't know about you, but I am not doing bug protein. And of course, once they get rid of all the labeling laws, And all they got to tell you about is how nutritional and wonderful it is for you. You won't need to know about it. There was another story. If I can get this to load. Time is ticking here. It's called Game Changers. And it's discussing all of these new startups that are changing the way that we view food. Let me see if I can very quickly connect back up here and we could do a little blurb of this. Please, please connect. Please connect me. I hate when I have to sing. All right, let's check a little bit of this out.
A new century obsessed with food. There's passion, scarcity, politics, and disruption.
We now understand every single gene that's in a tomato plant or a pepper plant.
Meet five teams of scientists and entrepreneurs who are changing the way we eat. They're all game changers.
Everyone sitting here with bated breath is dying to see what's underneath the cloche. So can you do the honors and lift the lid on your creation?
I can. This burger was produced in about 3 months.
3 months. And you would say it's...
Which is faster than a cow.
What did it taste like? Mm.
I was expecting the texture to be more soft.
After a decade-long push, this was the world's first public tasting of meat made in a lab.
We take them out of the cow, expand them in the lab until we have 40 billion cells. And then these are particular muscle cells, so they can form muscle cells after they have expanded. And we do that in...
If you guys remember, this was the test tube beef, and I have some really disturbing news about the test tube beef. I mean, when they first came out with this, they were like, don't worry, test tube beef is like $385,000 or something to make one burger. And Pigmine actually had those, $325,000 to make test tube beef. What they basically did, Pigmine had the video. They took these muscle cells and they put them into a petri dish and they physically exercised the muscle cells and let them grow until they made enough meat to be able to be formed into a patty and cook. And then these very courageous food tasters actually tasted it. No one was really crazy about it.
In a particular way so that they form real muscle fibers. And that's the basis for our meat. So if you have a lot of those muscle fibers, we can basically make a hamburger out of them.
And it'll be ecologically friendly because we won't have to cull cows. We won't have the methane problem. We're going to just be creating them in a petri dish.
Professor Post says a consumer-ready in vitro burger is still a ways off.
That will take at least another 10 years.
The environment can't wait. Cattle take up chunks of the Earth's land and consume our dwindling water supply. They're also a major source of greenhouse gas emissions. Bill Gates is betting on one alternative, a company called Beyond Meat.
Oh my God. And let's throw Bill Gates into the mix too.
Along with many competitors, the Missouri-based startup makes fake meats out of veggies.
So if you think about what meat is, not about where meat is from, but actually what it is, it's five things. It's amino acids, it's lipids, it's carbohydrates, it's minerals, and then it's water. None of those items have exclusive resonance in the animal. They're all available through the plant kingdom.
In San Francisco, startups and chefs are embracing what some call the single most efficient protein on the planet, insects.
We're starting out with cookies. And we're going to be introducing a whole line of foods that are enhanced with high-protein cricket flour. First, we dry roast the crickets, and then we run them through a large-scale mill, similar to the way that you would grind coffee.
The UN says insects are the key to global food sustainability.
Yes.
Insects became part of the mainstream global diet. We could reclaim one-third of the world's land surface, reduce greenhouse gas emissions by 18%, and lower the cost of food by 33%.
What I want to do is make people think of crickets as a superfood, the way that, you know, kale and quinoa and some of these other foods have been brought into popular culture.
Super crickets! Oh!
Tiny Farms is basically developing technologies and processes for raising insects at scale. And the reason we're doing that is because there's a huge chance for insects to form a part of the solution we need to address the problems of food security in the 21st century.
Oh my God. I mean, you can hear they are pushing this so hard. I'm telling you, people, this is all about making sure that we don't get good food anymore. You know, cricket protein, let the peasants eat cake. One of the things, before I run out of time here, there was an article about this lab-grown beef patty. It says, the cost of a lab-grown burger patty drops from $325,000 to $11.36. Now, looking at steak that's, you know, $13 a pound now, that's not too out of the ballpark anymore. Back in 2013, test tube hamburgers hit the headlines across the internet, and not because scientists had managed to more or less replicate meat in the lab. Well, it was for me, at least. But it was because it cost a price tag of $325,000 made from cultured muscle tissue cells. But just 2 years on, scientists have announced a drastic cut in the cost of producing one of these patties. Yes, with all of their ability to slice and dice DNA and stem cells and whatever else, saying that the price tag is now just a little more than $11 per burger, which is about $80 per kilogram of meat. And the technique requires just a small piece of muscle tissue to produce 10,000 kilos of meat. And guys, I've talked about 3D printers and the replicator in your home one of these days, and it's sure going to be there. Our 3D printed insect snacks, the taste of the future. And I'm going to say 3D printed insect snacks, nutraceuticals, and meat. Because of our hurdles in food safety, taste and consumer acceptance await the London South Bank University's quest to join two big food innovations, 3D printing and insect-based ingredients with printable insect flour. Ken Spears, one of the food technologists involved in the product, told bakeryandsnacks.com that they are working on developing an insect flour using mealyworms, which could then be incorporated into cereal bars, baked snacks, cake toppings, and breads. The team is looking at using this flour to make intricate 3D printed shapes adapted to extruded food. All right, guys, hope I didn't ruin your breakfast. Everyone have an awesome Thursday.